Thank you for listening to the podcast of Faith Baptist Church of Enfield, Connecticut. We hope and pray that these messages from Pastor Gary will be a help to you. You can find out more about our church at www.fbcenfield.com or find us on Facebook. God bless and enjoy the message.
We're starting a series called The Seven Spiritual Laws. These are laws or principles laid out in the Scriptures that apply to our lives, that apply to our, mainly our spiritual lives. But just like the law of gravity, law of thermodynamics, these are specific laws that are written by God, that are there, and if we apply them correctly, they're beneficial to us. If we go against them or try to go against them, it is a futile act. If you want more on these seven spiritual laws, you can go to keepbelieving.com, keepbelieving.com. Ray Pritchard has the series, actually, that's where I got the idea from, the series from Ray Pritchard. And so if you want more this week to study a little more about these seven spiritual laws, you can go there to that website and you can read. He actually has a book that he's written about these seven spiritual laws. Now, the first one this morning is the basis of all the other laws. And it is the basis of understanding what it means to serve God, understanding how we serve God, understanding how this applies to our lives. And the law is very simple. God is God and I'm not. God is God and I am not. Now, this law is the basis of our struggle. If you could recognize this struggle in your life, if you could see this one simple principle, it would revolutionize your life, because we're in a constant conflict between who is God and who is ruling in our hearts. That everything that's happening today, we're all upset about, it all comes back to this one law. And that's this: who is God? And He is God. He is the supreme ruler. He is the supreme authority over all. And the sooner we stop trying to be God, the easier life will become. Isaiah chapter 48, a couple of verses here. And we're going to look at a bunch of verses this morning. And we could look at a lot more. I had to cut a lot of verses out. But Isaiah chapter 48, verse 17 says this. Now notice what it says. Thus says the Lord, your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, I am the Lord your God, who leads you by the way you should go. So he, oftentimes in the scriptures, Deuteronomy, the law, Isaiah, we have this expression, I am the Lord your God. In fact, that's one of the Ten Commandments. I am the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me. Now notice verse 18 of this passage of Isaiah 48. Oh, that you had heeded my commandments, then your peace would have been like a river and your righteousness like the waves of the sea. Now, the prophet Isaiah is writing to his people that were in turmoil as a result of their rebellion against God. And he is making a declaration he makes often, and he's making to us, I am the Lord, your God. And then he says, if you had heeded my commandments, your peace would have been like a river. These verses demonstrate, like many other verses in the Bible, that God is God. He is the one true God. He is the God, the only God, the supreme God, and our struggles today are a result of us not recognizing who is God. Every mistake you've ever made comes from forgetting that He's God and you're not. He reigns over every situation. He reigns when good things happen. He reigns when bad things happen. He reigns over our friends. He reigns over our enemies. He reigns over heaven. He reigns over hell. He reigns over all gods. He does what he pleases. No one can oppose him. Everything he does is right. His wisdom is unsearchable. His plans are accomplished perfectly. Our God reigns completely and eternally. He is God. I am the Lord your God. And so the struggle we have constantly is who will rule my heart? Who will rule my heart? That's the struggle we have. That's the struggle we face daily. Who, when we become worried, that's the struggle. Who is God? That's the struggle between you saying, I can resolve all my problems, or the submission to say that I cannot control everything in life. I am going to have to trust God. So it comes back to the beginning, doesn't it? Now, there's a verse here in Isaiah chapter 14, verse 13, that talks about Satan. And before it, before verse 13, it talked about how Satan was created, a beautiful creature. And notice what it says, for you have said in your heart, notice what it says, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation of the farther sides of the north. Satan said in his heart, I will become higher than God. So the created being was trying to become greater than the creator. And so this is Satan's goal. Okay? Do you wonder why governments, for the most part, are anti-God? Because governments are controlled by Satan. Bible says in Ephesians that Satan is the god of this world. When Jesus was tempted, Satan said, I offer you the kingdoms of this world. So anytime a Christian is in government, it is a battle, because governments are controlled by Satan. Now notice what happened in Genesis. We'll go back to the beginning. When the serpent came to tempt Eve, verse 5 of Genesis 3, for God knows in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like what? God. Knowing good and evil. So here is the temptation. Here is the tension in our lives. You become like God. You can decide what is right and wrong. You can decide what you want to do. You can decide what you'll do with your life. You can, so the temptation that Satan gave to Eve was, you can become God. And so that struggle today, that fight we have today, is in our heart. It's in our maze. It's like, who took the cookies? Like mom said, don't eat the cookies, we're having company over. And you go by the cookie jar, I guess I'm giving an illustration from personal experience, right? You're thinking this is for little kids. But when you open the cookie jar and you take the cookie, what are you saying? You're saying, first of all, yeah, my mother was mistaken. She really wanted me to have one. Or my mother was unjust, or my wife, because she made these cookies for the company and not for me, and I want these cookies now. I do not want to wait. That's what we're saying. Or that's what a little kid, I don't think a little child is philosophizing that much about it, okay? But what I'm talking about is the implications of that thought, okay? Is the conflict in our heart about who is God. Our attitude, our reaction, our submission, our understanding, our trust really comes back to the conflict of who is God. And the way we live today is a reflection that we really don't believe God is God. We believe that we are higher than God, and that's the whole the way Satan operates. He wants us to be lifted up higher than God. And we wonder why there's so much conflict in society today, because everybody thinks they're God. Everybody has their own authority. There is no absolute authority anymore. Every man, it said in Israel, that every man did that which was right in his own eyes, and it led to confusion, and it did not lead to freedom. And here's the big lie. The big lie was that if you eat the fruit, it's going to lead to freedom because you'll know. And actually, it led to slavery. True freedom is finding our rest in God and our submission in God. So God is God, and God has complete freedom to rule me as he sees fit. God has complete freedom to rule me as he sees fit. Now that, for many of us right now, you're like, yeah, let me think about that one. Now notice a few verses here in Romans chapter 11, verse 33. Bible says this, oh, the depths of the riches both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. For who has known the mind of the Lord? Or who has become his counselor? Or who has first given to him and shall be repaid to him? For of him and through him and to him are all things, to whom glory forever, to whom be glory forever. Amen. And then Psalm 115:3 says, but our God is in heaven. He does whatever he pleases. So the freedom of God, the sovereignty of God, the absolute self-existence of God, that God is God, and God is God without us. God doesn't need us. God did not have to create us. God is not obligated to us. And so seven statements about God's freedom. Number one, we cannot fully comprehend or understand God. A God you can fully comprehend is no longer God. He's created in your image. You made him. Secondly, God can do anything he wants. God doesn't have, there's no legislation against God. There's no law that limits God. God has the right to deal with us how he chooses. He's under no obligation to him. We have, in our society today, we have this idea that God is obligated to us. God is not obligated to give you another breath of life. When the sun rose today, that was God's grace. That you can move and walk is God's grace. God is not obligated to make you healthy. God is not obligated to give you money. God is not obligated to make life easy for you. God is at no obligation to us. He does not have to treat me how he treats my neighbor. God deals with us as individuals. He may allow one to be sick and one to be healed. But there's no precedent, there's no obligation. He is completely free and sovereign and independent to deal with us exactly how he wants to deal with you and me, and he may deal with us different because he knows what's best and what is right. He can answer my prayers how he chooses. We cannot force God to do what we want to do. Many people become discouraged with God because I prayed and God didn't answer me. Time to take the decorations down. No, God is not obligated. He's God, I'm not. If he's God, he's going to answer how he wants. If I'm God, it's like, all right, God, you have to do this for me. God, I prayed this. Why didn't you do it? What's wrong with you, God? Wait a minute, who's God? Who is God? You or God? He does not tolerate rivals to his throne. Isn't that the first commandment? Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one God, and you shall have no other gods before me, no graven images. No rivals to him. And then, he is not obligated to give me an explanation. Though in his grace he does, and though we see his plan in our lives, he is not obligated to us. We want an explanation. We want fairness. We want God to explain himself. But the first law, the basic law of spiritual life, is that God is God and he is, and we are not. He is not obligated to us. Everything that we receive from God is by his grace and his mercy and his will. If we'd understand this, if we'd submit to this, we would save ourselves from a life of frustration and conflict. Because many of the conflicts we have in our hearts, whether it's bitterness because of how my life turned out, or anger because of what somebody did to me, or unbelief because God did not do what we thought he would do, all of these come down to this first law. He is God. And I'm not. He's God. I'm not God. The book of Job is a classic illustration of this struggle. And if you've read the book of Job, you've probably heard of the book of Job. Job was a man, he had everything, and then God took everything away from him. And his wife said, curse God and die. He refused. And then his friends came, and he had this council of friends, and they had this great philosophical discussion for most of the book of Job is why did this happen? And his friends kept telling Job, you've sinned. And Job was like, no, I'm a righteous person. I didn't sin. And there was this whole discussion. And that's the book of Job. This whole discussion of how could God do this to this righteous Job? And so they went back and forth and had all these discussions and reasons and all this. And then chapter 38, God answers. And I won't, if you have time this week, you can read chapters 38 to 42. But you could read the whole book if you want. But Job, verse 1 of chapter 38, and the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge?" And so Job waxed eloquent with his friends and defended himself in his self-righteousness. And then God came and he says, who's this talking without knowledge? That's probably 90% of the commentary on Facebook. God's like, who's commenting without knowledge? Verse 4, like I said, I won't read. I'm just going to read a few verses here. But verse 4, he says, "Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding." Scientists, we are proud of our accomplishments in our modern age. But you would be amazed how many things we still don't know. And we still don't understand. And we still don't have answers for. Why? God's coming to Joseph. Where were you? When I laid the earth, when I created, where were you? Verse 12, "Have you commanded the morning since your days begun? Do you push a button for the sun to come up, Job? Does it depend on you? Have you figured out how that happens every day? And cause the dawn to know its place?" Chapter 40, verse 2, "Shall the one who contends with the Almighty correct him? He who rebukes God, let him answer it." Listen, guys, I know you're all upset about everything that's happening, but I want you to know God is not even shaken. Everybody will give an answer. And he says, "Shall the one who contends with the Almighty," that's what people are really, this is where the root of the problem is today. We are fighting between who's God, I'm God or he's God. That's where the fight is. That's where the hatred and the battle is. Jesus said, "They don't hate you, they hate me." "Shall the one who contends with the Almighty correct him? He who rebukes God, let him answer." So God's saying to Job, "Job, I know you guys think you're really smart, but there's a big gap between me and you. And no matter how educated or smart or how many posts you've read, there's a big gap between you and God. There is a big gap. And you can't tie God up and force God to be a certain way or make God be who he is. God is God. And there's only one response. Worship. At the end, Job said in verse 5, "I have heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eyes see you." And what did he say in verse 6? "Therefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes." So Job, at the end of this great discussion, said, "I really didn't know you. I really didn't know you." And the truth is, today, listen, we really don't know God. Do we really know God? We've read some scriptures and we've heard some sermons. We may study theology. And we're very quick to speak. But maybe we should be silent before God. So the answer to the first law is complete submission or complete destruction. So there's two responses. Submit to God, or don't submit to God. Submission to God leads to freedom. Rebellion against God leads to slavery. And we have a world of people that are enslaved. And they think they're free. But in the end, as we know, the end of the story, every knee shall bow. Every knee shall bow to God. And so our response today needs to be to submit to God. How do you live the Christian life? You submit to God. Submit to Him. Give your life to Him. That conflict you have every day. My way. That's our American philosophy. I did it my way. I won't sing for you this morning. Or His way. In the end, there's only one way. God, think about this. God, in His mercy, has allowed you to do it your way. But you don't have much longer. Because in the end, it'll only be His way. Stop trying to be God. Stop trying to tell God what to do. Bow down before Him this morning.